Hello and welcome to Light the Eye, episode number 6. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm a college student.
Oh gosh, we haven't even gotten through the open yet and you're launching into stories. That's Robert Rosenthal. And with it being the end of December, Robert, this is the time of year when a lot of podcasts might do a year in review type of episode. And we're not about cliches. I know you like to break the mold.
Yes.
So, I guess we're going to do a year
Let's
in review
do exactly
episode.
What's the most cliche thing we could possibly do.
Are you okay with that?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, for football, we missed the season, right? So, we didn't get to have episodes during the season. Let's just cram them all into one episode.
Fair enough. Let's go ahead and we'll explore the 2025 football season in review for the Illini. First, we light the eye. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Is the Rosenthal family busy at Christmas time? Do they all gather?
Every single one in Champaign. Every one of my kids, all the grandkids, every single one in Champaign. Perfect.
We'll be traveling around the Chicagoland area to see all of my family. But happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everybody who's celebrating.
You know, I should probably... we have Illini Santa back here, right? On the shelf? I'm going to point to it. There we go. There's Illini Santa right there.
Yeah, it's not a mirror. You have to...
Right is left.
Yeah. Illini Santa. Where did you get Illini Santa?
Look, when people buy me presents, they're just like, what do you buy for that guy? Oh, it's just some Illini shirt or Illini shorts or an Illini Santa or an Illini ornament or whatever. It's just people know what to get me.
Doesn't somebody say, yeah, that guy's in his 50s. He doesn't need another Illini thing. And then they give it to you, and you're like, cool.
100%. They know I'm a one-trick pony. I have one thing in my life, and it makes it easy to buy gifts for me.
Is there an aspect of you that is still, forever 12?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Pennants on my wall. I've never left the phase of, let me get a shirt from that bowl game. Let me get a poster to commemorate that moment. I will never leave that moment of the 12-year-old decorating his room with his favorite team.
Arrested Development.
1,000%. Now we got to figure out if I'm Buster or what.
Speaking of young people, the young people in my life said that we are supposed to remind you to like and subscribe, because they're all about watching YouTube videos. And so if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Apparently that is good for us.
I think you're supposed to say something like mash that subscribe button or something.
Mash it. The Illini are going back to Mashville.
I love
it. In Nashville.
Mashville.
For the Music City Bowl.
I'm in. I'm taking a drink of water so I don't cough.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the 2025 football season and just walk through it and get share some of our thoughts. Memories, significant moments that we saw in the 2025 season. 8-4 for Illinois, 5-4 in the Big Ten. We talked about it on an earlier podcast. Maybe by where you thought the bar or what the ceiling could be for this team, you could say it was a slight, if disappointment's the right word. I mean, it's a good season. It was a good season at 8-4. I don't know that we need to retread all of that. But just as a reminder, the season started with people wondering if this was a playoff team. It wasn't, but it was still a bowl team and a good football team with one of the greatest quarterbacks in program history.
Yeah, in the preseason, there were two ways to look at it. One, if you're number 12 and there's 12 teams to make the playoff and you're number 12 in the preseason poll, then yes, the playoff expectations are very real. On the other hand, Las Vegas had the over-under on wins at 7.5, so this was a team that exceeded even those expectations and got to 8 wins. So, yes, on one side of the argument, it's going to be rare, and it has been impossibly rare, to finish the season in the top 12 teams and, get some kind of playoff bid. So these opportunities don't come along all the time. So to miss out on that, yeah, step back. to hit the over in Vegas to get to 8 wins for like the, what, 8th time in 50 years or whatever it is. Yeah, it's still a really big deal. We can get to that as we go game by game, but overall it's a kind of hit right on the mark. Passing grade, a solid B plus season, but everybody was really, really hoping for an A and you know, maybe a shot at this playoff.
The season started August 29th against Western Illinois, 52-3 blowout win. The outcome wasn't that much of a surprise. Sometimes those lopsided wins come no matter what kind of season you end up having because of the significant talent disparity that happens, or size disparity maybe, that happens between players at the FBS and the FCS level. But for me, I'm always going to remember that as the day Hank Beatty broke a record that was set by Red Grange,
yes,
in punt return yards.
Yes. I'm gonna close the laptop here so that I can. As I told you, I'm gonna do this whole thing from memory. So I'm not gonna look up any stats. I'm not gonna look up any scores. I'm just gonna go from up here of what happened each game.
Yeah, yes. I can't do that. That's why I have a sheet of paper in front of me.
Yes,
to remind me of some things.
The Hank Beatty game. You have to remember in August there was the question of how do you replace Pat Bryant. You know, you have a guy, a third-round draft pick by the Broncos, and he was the obvious go-to receiver. You also had Zachary Franklin as the number two guy. You lost both of those receivers. So when you have all the tailbacks coming back, you have the tight end coming back, you have the offensive line coming back, you have the quarterback coming back, the big question for the offense was, is there a go-to receiver if Pat Bryant is off to the NFL and if Zachary Franklin isn't around anymore? And that game was a resounding, oh, yeah, Hank Beatty's going to be that guy all season. So, yeah, 100% that was the Hank Beatty game. Finally, the guys who do the Field Pass podcast for Illini Board, Dan had researched over the summer that Illinois had the longest drought without a punt return touchdown of any Power Four team. Every other team had. Illinois didn't have a punt return for touchdown since Viangelo Bentley in 2013, I think it was, maybe 2012. And so... So, yes, to break that, Beatty gets the punt return touchdown, also gets over 100 yards receiving. Hey, there is a go-to guy, and there was a kind of a check-that-box kind of thing for Illini fans of like, okay, the one worry for the offense, Beatty looks like he's going to have a special season. Yes, it was only Western Illinois, but it's still like, okay, yes, does Luke have a – does he have chemistry? Does he have, I know where he's going and he knows where I'm throwing it? Is there that guy on this team? And Hank Beatty answered that in the first game.
And he doesn't fully replace Pat Bryant. Nobody does, but he's not quite the same type of receiver, not as physical, big-bodied, but he's such a playmaker. And we saw Hank Beatty eventually score in all kinds of ways.
Yes.
So it definitely was a game where, did you learn a ton about the Illini in week one? Those kinds of things. It didn't tell you, it wasn't really a bellwether for what the rest of the year would be.
Yes.
But it was a fun game.
And they kept it very vanilla. They didn't want to show Duke anything. So it was a very, let's just get the lead, do our base stuff on offense and on defense, put nothing on film. You're not going to run any trick plays. You're not going to try any different kind of sets that you're debuting this season. Just run your basic stuff. Beat the tiny school, and then get ready for Duke. And, you know, you even did the game on a Friday so that you could be ready to, you know, an extra day of practice to get ready for your road game against a Duke team that had been pretty good the year before, and you weren't exactly sure what they would be in 2025.
They reportedly had a high-priced quarterback, Darren Mensah.
Yep.
And the Illini went out there to Duke. I'm always going to remember, well, couple of side things. I was on the trip doing the radio engineering in the pregame show, and I got a chance. I was with an event staffer setting up the night before, and I just said, "Can I see it?" And she knew exactly what I was talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. My brain is like, see the Duke game. I'm trying to like.
Well, I'm not at the game yet. It's the day before the game.
Okay.
Okay. But I'm just there. And I said, is there a chance that I could see it?
Okay, and what was it?
Cameron Indoor.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. I was thinking on Illinois side of like, was this a trophy game? Okay, now I'm catching up.
No. Yes. She knew what I was talking about.
Yes.
So I was treated to a small tour of Cameron Indoor. I don't know square footage wise, but it's about the size of Huff Hall.
Yeah,
here on definitely. Campus.
Yep.
And the bleachers are right up on the court. You've seen it. Everyone's seen it on TV.
Yep.
But it is a fairly unremarkable look to it, other than it has an old classic feel. But then you know what the history of Duke basketball is and who's been in there. And the bleachers are out, and there's still gum on it from decades ago where kids have put their gum, and the intimacy of that gym and the feel of it, there's nothing like it.
Yep.
And the fact that some of the nation's best college and future NBA players have come through there, and coaching legends and all that. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was also surprised by how small Krzyzewskiville is. You know, they're famous for the students camping out to get the best seats for the game. And so they built this lawn right next to Cameron Indoor where, you know, if you're watching a Duke North Carolina game, they're going to pull some B-roll of students in tents in Krzyzewskiville having camped out overnight to get the best seats and all this stuff. But because the building's so small, the little area where they set up the tents is pretty tiny as well. Like, everything about it is like, wait, that's the building? That's it? I got a tour of it, gosh, 2014, 2013, when I was on the campus.
Oh, of course you did.
Well, I just got lucky because when Illinois was playing North Carolina, what was that, 14, 2015? No, 2014, playing at North Carolina. My son's best friend from high school, my youngest son's best friend, played football at Duke. And so while I went to the Illinois-North Carolina game that day, at the exact same time, Northwestern and Duke were playing. And so my wife went and sat in the parents section from the tickets that Zach had gotten her. And then Zach gave, you know, he's a Duke athlete, so he gave us like a tour, a personal tour of the, you know, facilities, including Cameron Indoor. So, yeah, pretty cool. It's such, you're right. It's like, this is it. This is the building right here. Because you're used to, you know, here, what, the State Farm Center takes up several city blocks, you know, between 1st Street and 4th Street.
We got nothing but space out here.
Yes, and over there, it would fit between 1st and 2nd Street, you know. It would fit inside the armory here,
yeah.
You know. It's crazy how tiny it is.
When I think of the Duke game, a couple of things that come to my mind. Hank Beatty scoring from a Wildcat.
Yep.
Cole Russ getting his first touchdown catch, and it was not an easy one.
Pretty spectacular, yep.
In a corner, and the Illini and turnovers. Mm-hmm. The turnover fairy blessed the Illini, and the whole thing going into that, okay, this is going to be the real test. It's a true road game. At that time, nobody knew how good Duke would be, but they figured to be formidable. They ended up winning the ACC, but yes. Not making the playoffs. That's a whole other story.
Yep.
So it turned into a quality win, and Illinois hung 45 on them. That was the game. Field position was huge.
Yes. When I think of that game, the main thing I think about is the crowd. So we did.
Oh, you're going to think about emotions and feelings, aren't you?
Are you shocked? Are you not entertained? Brought this thing with, hung it from a tree in the Duke parking lot. So I got out there, me and my friend John, we got out there at 7 a.m. to try to get a good spot. We needed a good tree to hang this thing on. We knew we had people showing up, and so we thought we'd have like 50 to 75 people at the tailgates, and we wanted to pick out a good big spot to set up tents and tables and everything else. We ended up having like 125 Illini fans show up at the tailgate, and the spot we went to get at 7 a.m., we still could have gotten at noon. Like, there's just no tailgating scene whatsoever. They set up something over by Cameron Indoor for fans to just kind of go to. That's a university-sponsored little corridor that people walk through, and they have tents set up and this and that. But other fans just show up a half hour before the game and go in. So it was this really odd there are more Illini fans tailgating than Duke fans. And then you get in there, and one half of the stadium was orange, and the other half of the stadium was blue. You know, there were, excuse me, obviously more Duke fans there than there were Illinois fans, but it was still 8,000 to 10,000 Illini fans made the trip. So many Illini fans on the East Coast, I mean, just talking to people who swung by the tailgate, so many Illini fans on the East Coast were like, hey, last season was great. I looked at the schedule this year, probably not going to make it back to Champaign. I live in Alexandria, Virginia. But, hey, you know that game, you know, the game at Duke, I could get, that's a drive for me. I could get to that game. And so many people had that same thought. So there were, I've said, it's the most Illini fans I've seen in a true road game that I can remember.
Outside of the Big Ten?
No, including Big Ten games. There were 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 Illini fans there.
Actually, Big Ten road tickets might be harder to get.
Yeah. Usually, yeah. If it's a sold out stadium, then you have to be one of the 400 seats that they give away to the other school or whatever. You know, there have been Purdue games. I should put a caveat. Northwestern games, especially when Illinois is good, but that's in the town where the majority of the Illini fans live. This was a travel to a road game, and it was. As I said, press box was on one side of the stadium. The Illinois fans were on the opposite side. And you could see, even where the Duke seats were sold, let's say 50% of those people showed up. So it was pretty spotty. You could see Duke fans that were seated by all these Illini fans. Like, I don't want to do this. I'm going to go to the other side. So you saw a lot of people walking around that end zone just to sit over with the Duke fans. They're like, I think I got tickets here on the Illinois side for some reason, so I'm going to go over to the other side. So it became this, like, you know, back and forth. It wasn't the volume of, like, the, say, the basketball game at Tennessee where a bunch of fans showed up. But, yes, this season, I said this after the Tennessee game when we talked about it on here, this season has been this crazy, like, man, the fans really showed up for the Duke football game, and they really showed up for the Tennessee basketball game. Like, this was a we travel kind of fall. So that's my main memory, is as all these turnovers are happening, and the, you know, the all these fumbles that Illinois is recovering, and then the Tanner Heckel interception and everything else, it just kept getting louder and louder over on that Illinois side, and more Duke fans leaving the place. It was crazy.
So Illinois was 2-0 after Duke, and then they came home for a home game against Western Michigan. Before I go any further, can you remember the score of the Western Michigan game?
38-0.
Okay. I had to look at it. I knew it was a yep. shutout.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember a thing about that game except that Xavier Scott got hurt.
Yes. I think the biggest, that's probably the, in retrospect, the Duke win was big. It was mostly turnovers, but 5 turnovers is going to flip any game. The Western Illinois game, given that they won the MAC and they went on and, you know, won their bowl game and, like, had a really good season and a great, great defense. Looking back, beating them 38-0 is a pretty big deal. Like, that was a solid, solid win against, look, how many times has Illinois somehow played a MAC team when they're having their best season, or Illinois playing Arkansas State when they're 10-2 that year, or Illinois playing Louisiana Lafayette when they win 9 games and this and that. It was always that curse of playing them. Well, here's another MAC champion, the best team in the MAC, and you shut them out 38-0. It was an impressive performance. I remember a lot of fans were upset because it was 10-0 at halftime. They're like, we should be blowing this team out and this and that. Well, they had a solid, solid defense, and it was, you know, 38-0 is impressive against them.
Well, we've reached the end of the first quarter of the season. Illinois is 3-0 after beating Western Michigan, and Big Ten play is looming.
I think that's it. I think we're done. Nothing bad is going to happen in the rest of the next game. I'm sure went fine.
Well, let me tell you something good. We're in the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning on the campus of the University of Illinois. So grateful that we've been able to work an arrangement up and utilize this space. It's fantastic hosts, thanks to Sean Mills and Kevin Southworth helping us in production today. And a reminder that Light the Eye is presented by the U of I Community Credit Union. Great partners for us as well. Do encourage you to check them out. All right. September 20th, a Saturday night in Bloomington, Illinois, going to Indiana. And, you know, is Indiana, were they kind of a fluke? What could they hope for? Illinois, I think, was ranked higher coming into the game.
Number 9 versus number 19.
Indiana hadn't, to be frank, had not played anybody. They'd not had a power opponent yet on their schedule. We've talked about this in the pod before. This game's forever going to be in my memory.
Yep.
Because I had the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to call the game on radio. So I'm always going to remember that, and I've said before, I'm not going to trade this back, even though it was a blowout. But I do remember Illinois giving up the blocked punt to score a touchdown. D'Angelo Puns did it. But then the big strike to Colin Dixon, right? I think it was a 54-yarder from Altmyer to Dixon. The game was tied, and you thought, all right, Illinois had a costly turnover. The worst thing had happened, but they've struck right back, and now we've got a ball game. That was not the case. Indiana would go on to score 9 touchdowns total. And, I mean, we know the story of Indiana now. I mean, they're legitimate. They're a national champion contender. They were going to win that game probably no matter what, even if Illinois brought their A game. But Illinois just looked out of sorts the entire night.
Yes. And to make matters worse, yes, Xavier Scott was out, but then you lost 4 other defensive backs during the game. None were major injuries. I think 3 of the 4 returned the next week. And you still didn't have Juice Clark back from his injury. So you were down to playing your second string defensive backs. And but, I mean, look, yes, in the second half, you had your second string defense mostly in there because you just had gotten a lot of injuries. But they're not throwing the ball. They were running. It was the defensive line and linebackers that were getting given up 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 yards every single carry, and Indiana didn't even have to throw. So you can't really even pin it on that. It was just one of those, didn't know how good they were, unprepared. Kurt Cignetti said in the post game, like, we were watching film on them, we felt like we could bully them, or however he said that. Like, we felt like we could start to overwhelm them with some aggression and this and that, and they sure did. And it was, man, that was tough. Like, again, I set up a big tailgate. We had this thing there. We were ready to celebrate just like we did at Duke and light this thing after the game and everything else. And then it starts raining after the game, and I'm breaking down the tailgate by myself in the rain. And some Indiana fans stole some stuff from the tailgate as they needed a scalp, apparently. And so they took some chairs and all this stuff. And I'm just breaking down a sad tailgate in the rain after watching the team lose 63-10. It was a rough evening in Bloomington.
I looked at 3 of the 4 first Big Ten games, Indiana, USC, and Ohio State, and I said, can you get 2 or 3? Mm-hmm. If you get 2 or 3, you might have a path into the playoff. In my head, I thought, this is before the season, and I'm not, it doesn't matter. I just thought that Illinois would win against USC. I just felt that.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that Ohio State would be the toughest based on the fact they just won the national championship and they were projected to be that good again.
Yep.
And I thought the Indiana game was going to be the more 50-50-ish game. Can you steal that on the road? And then you've got one in your pocket to come home and got 2 chances to beat the 2 other very good Big Ten teams. Turns out the Indiana game was not a 50-50 game.
Not at all.
So you lose that game, and now you're coming home. All I remember about USC is that they had had outstanding defensive, like, sacks were really high.
Yep.
And there was this sense of, uh-oh, if we couldn't even handle anything that Indiana was doing, you know, now USC's coming in. And it turned out that Illinois, man, of course, that game is going to be remembered. It was homecoming, and David Alano kicks the game winner. So that's ultimately the story. But it felt like a game that Illinois actually dominated most of it until there were some self-inflicted issues at the end that allowed USC back into it.
Yeah, without, I mean, fumbling at the 1 yard line twice is a
that's not good.
Usually a killer. Like, that's ending two drives that you know you could you're about to score. It's taken 14 points off the board. So in any scenario, if you tell somebody before that game, hey, here's something that's going to happen in this game. Illinois is going to get to the USC one and fumble two times, and USC will recover both fumbles. You're going to say, well, then that's it. Like, no, zero chance of winning this one because you were going to have to win a close game, and that means you're down. You know, you're losing 14 points from what you should expect. Yeah, no chance to win this. And they did find a way to win it. That was a, I mean, look, it kept USC out of the playoff. We haven't, like, nobody's talking about that. But if USC wins that game, they're 10-2. Their other losses were Oregon and who?
Michigan? No, they beat Michigan.
Oregon and Ohio State? They didn't play Indiana. I can't remember who their
other losses were. Here's a real question. Are you going to clip this in post? Or are you just going to let your wondering be part of the podcast?
My wondering is the podcast.
I've seen you write before where you literally write that I'm not sure about this. Oh, let me go look it up. Yes. And put that in the article.
Yes. My entire life is a live stream, essentially.
And people follow this?
Yes. Okay. People pay to get beyond a paywall to read those words. It's the weirdest thing. But yes.
I don't get it. But anyway.
It was what USC fans right now are looking back on to say, that was it. Like, win that game. Oh, it was Notre Dame. That's what they lost.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they lost to Notre Dame and Oregon.
See, right here, you could have just...
we don't need post.
You could reinstart the conversation right here instead of live wondering about a factoid. You're the one that said you're going to go off no notes.
My randomness is endearing. So, yes, if you had lost to Notre Dame and you lost to Oregon and you're 10-2, that Big Ten team is probably almost certainly in the playoff. So what kept them out? David Alano. Like, this game kept USC from making the playoff.
And where did David Alano go to high school?
I believe Naperville North. I'm glad I didn't say Central. Like, my brain was like, is it Central North, Central North, Central North, Naperville North?
Naperville North. And what are the colors of Naperville North?
I believe there's a green thing happening. Is there green? There's no green.
No.
Oh, boy.
Orange and blue.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How about that? I don't know. Again, we should do something. Like, we put a map right here and say, Robert, put a pin where you think Wakanda is, and I'd be like, I don't know, like by Joliet? No, I think it's north. I don't know.
Way north.
Yes, it would be. I would do so poorly at that.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you have high school colors of the entire Chicagoland region memorized.
Yes, yes. Now, if we want to talk Metro East, I can.
I understand. I can nail all those. Here's the thing: we don't.
Oh, okay. Yes. Good point. Good point. Well stated. So anyway, yes, this was the game that kept USC out of the playoff. It was a great performance by the offensive line after getting run over by the Indiana defensive line. It was great all around. And if you don't fumble at the one twice, you probably win by 14, 17, 21, something like that. It was impressive.
I also remember there was some debate for USC fans because at the under two, after the 2 minute warning, USC scored. They threw a touchdown to Lemon, right? Mekhi, yes. Lemon, who's an All-American now.
Was the best player Illinois played this year.
Yeah. I think he's Fernando a consensus Mendoza all. I think included. I just saw he's a consensus All-American.
Yeah.
So he was – nobody could defend him. And it was a great throw from Maiava. But did USC score too soon?
100%.
They did. I'm still of the philosophy, if you're behind and you need a touchdown, to start playing around with the clock, especially in college football, I think it's just too risky. I think you still have to just go score when you score, and then defense, you need to go make a stop. The problem for USC was they were playing Luke Altmyer, who's become one of the best two-minute guys in Illinois history and one of the best in the country. At orchestrate, I mean, that's what he did last year.
Yep.
And he didn't actually have to do it too much this year. But he knew how to, and he perfectly executed drive to get Alano in place. They worked the clock fine down to zeros. It was well done. I don't really fault Lincoln Riley trying to look at it from an outsider view. But if you're Illinois and you were to say, if you're going to score, please score as soon as possible, that's exactly what happened. So it worked in their favor.
Everybody in my section in the stadium, as soon as they – I mean, obviously you're disappointed because you're hoping to get a stop there and then you're not going to need an offensive drive. But everybody looked at the clock and were like, okay, we can. There's still plenty of time here, and all you got to do is get in a field goal range. So, yeah, it was ideal. Look, that Saturday afternoon was so perfect. I mean, you got to think of – it's homecoming. It's a sellout. There were no sellout. There was in the 2010s. There were what, two sellouts? Maybe the entire. I think Michigan in 2010 and North Carolina in 2016 were the only sellouts the entire decade. So here you had your third sellout in a row, I believe it was. Because you sold out. Yeah, you second. Sellout in a row? I can't remember exactly. Again, going off memory here. But perfect day. Big noon Saturday was in town. Great tailgating, national TV. The spotlight is in Champaign. Two ranked teams. I think they were, at that point, it was 22 and 24. Two ranked teams, national TV, big time game, and you come away with a last second field goal to win it. And keep the team out of the playoff. It was just a fantastic Saturday, just about a perfect homecoming when compared to everything else. There has not been a homecoming like that in a long time.
And, of course, your playoff fate is still in your hands at this point. 4-1 after the win over USC. Now, just don't trip up when you go over to West Lafayette to start the month of October. The fourth day of October, take it on the Boilermakers. Barry Odom is projected to take Purdue up a notch from the basement after the failed Ryan Walters couple of years. You come in there and wasn't as probably pretty as you wanted it to be, but you still took care of business.
I'll remember that game as Luke Altmaier throwing dimes. Like, there were those two deep balls, one to Dixon, one to Beatty. There was the long 75-yard touchdown to Beatty. There was a lot going on, but that was a few things went wrong, and, Purdue's assembling a few drives here, but Alano went, 5 for 5 on field goals, I think, and then Luke took over, had almost 400 yards passing, and even though, Purdue was hanging around. There was still this feeling of like, this is why you have a great quarterback for these games on the road, which it's going to get tricky sometimes. We're going to talk about it for Wisconsin and Washington. Sometimes things go really poorly once you go on the road. And that game was like, we have Altmaier and Alano and we're fine. And they performed to expectations. You got a couple turnovers. Ashton Hollins made a huge play on that, punching the ball out from the punt returner, and Illinois recovers it like the 8 or whatever, has an 8-yard drive they need for points. And so everything went to plan with that when you have a quarterback who can calmly take over, and that's what happened.
We've reached the halftime portion of the season. Do we have a band or anything?
No.
Is Barry Houser here?
We do not. We're right next door. We go knock
next door
on
the
door.
Is the Harding Band building.
Yes, we could go see if there's a couple trombones who could come in. And
you would just let the recording keep going.
Oh, 100%. People would love that kind of.
Hang on. I'm going to go knock on Barry's door or window at the Harding Band building while the recording's going on.
If I would have gone back here to actually grab Illini Santa earlier, I wanted to watch your face. We'd be 2 minutes into the podcast. I'm taking my headset off on video and going back to grab Illini Santa.
Try to stay on point.
Yes.
That's the whole reason you wanted me to do this.
No, the whole reason you are the guy who will keep us on point. I'm the guy who will drive it off the bridge.
I know. That's why you said you needed me here.
And I do. More than ever.
All right. 5-1 Illinois. And look, you lost to Indiana at this point. Ohio State's coming in. Number one. You got a shot at them at home. It's at home. And if it's ever, if there's ever a time to do it, now would be it, because if you can upend Ohio State, now you're really in the picture for the playoff. And it just didn't happen.
Yep.
And Ohio State was better. A lot was celebrated in that Illinois kept Ohio State to a relatively low point total for them. And actually, excuse me, that Illinois actually put a relatively high amount of points on mm-hmm. against Ohio State with 16 points. I mean, Ohio State wasn't letting anybody score. They've had the best defense
yep.
all year,
yep.
period.
If Duke fans looked at that game and said, no one will ever know we were absolutely in this game, but we turned it over five times, Illinois fans will look at the Ohio State game and say, Illinois had more yards actually moving the ball on Ohio State's defense, you know, not in a going to score 30 sense, but in a picking up first downs and moving the ball and playing decent defense, but those turnovers and the deflected pass that fell to an Ohio State receiver and everything else, just all of that led to took ourselves out of the game and didn't have a chance in the end. It was there for the taking that day. Played decent football, but a couple really bad turnovers and short fields for Ohio State, and you just can't do that against the number one team in the country. They're going to take advantage of that.
Long snapping turned out to be an issue a few times this season too.
Yeah, it's the kneel down. It's almost worse than a turnover. You know, like not only do you give the other team the ball, you lose 15 or 18 yards or wherever the punter's standing when his knee hits the turf. So, yeah, that kind of stuff is just really, really, really hard to overcome. So, yep, the mistakes cost, and that was that.
Now at 5-2, there were some that felt, well, okay, you've lost two games, but you've lost to what's looking like the best two teams.
Yeah,
certainly
at that
the Big
point,
Ten.
Then Indiana had beaten Oregon.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, well, so Indiana is like top five good. So, yeah, I could see a resume where you lose to, you know, two of the top five teams. That probably gets you in the playoff. So, yes, there was still that conversation.
Yep. Others had said, look, you were just blown out at Indiana. It's only two losses, but
that's going to hang around your neck the whole season.
Yeah,
yes.
It wasn't even close.
Yep.
You've now demonstrated that you can't hang with playoff teams.
Yes.
And therefore, you won't make the playoffs. But there was still some hope there. The door was still open. And you got to go to, after a bye, go on the road to Washington. I felt that would be a tough game for all the reasons that, by and large, it turned out to be tough, except for one. Illinois was able to move the ball around
mm-hmm.
because Ryan Walters is Washington's defensive coordinator. And we know the story there.
Sure.
But it's a long trip. It's an incredibly hostile environment with how that stadium, the sound sits on top of you and how the students, the setting can almost be distracting because it's so beautiful.
Yep.
I just thought it all added up to problems for a road team. They just rarely lose out there, and it turned out to be tough again, and the conditions didn't help.
To me, again, I was there. I was, you know, out in the conditions before and after. The fact that the rain mostly stopped during the game, you know, the start of the third quarter, it was raining pretty hard, but then it even let up then. And this is not an excuse as to why Illinois lost. It is I think the game plan was set up for, all right, well, they're not going to be able to throw it, so we're going to focus on these things to shut down Washington's run game and this and that, because it's going to be pouring rain and they just aren't going to be able to passing offense. Here's our game plan. And there was a little, you know, there's sprinkles and they're going with their game plan. But then you look and the sun started peeking through and there was just this little gap. As soon as the game ended, it was pouring. When I walked to my car, it was just, my hoodie couldn't keep the rain out. Like, it was pouring after the game. And had it been pouring like that during the game, it would have been difficult for Washington to throw the ball like they did. But the fact that you know, look, half of Washington's fans stayed home because of the forecast. It was 90% chance of rain. It was supposed to be like heavy rain by the afternoon. And it, you know, it was a gale warning that they were talking about how they were going to shut down all the sailgating stuff because there were supposed to be these winds out on the water and everything else. And it just didn't materialize until about 5 p.m. that day is when the main storm really rolled through. And it allowed Washington to throw all over Illinois. That was just a quarterback who's really good, making play after play that opened up the run game. And it just, you know, what they convert 8 of the first 9 third downs or whatever. And it was just, okay, well, at this point, you're not going to stop them and you're not going to win this game.
So that put Illinois at 5-3 on the season and pretty much dashed your playoff hopes.
Yes.
I think there was some unlikely scenario where maybe if you win out. So you're going to come home now and face Rutgers. And the big question coming home is can the defense play better? Yes. Obviously, Washington turned out to be we knew that they were a pretty good football team. And Rutgers was not having a great season. But they had had some momentum coming in, and you come home for November 1st, and Illinois, they didn't pout. They responded and played well.
Very, very well, yeah.
35-13, the win over Rutgers.
Yeah, everything that week went kind of according to plan. You know, you had a season at that point of you lost Indiana, blown out. You lost to Ohio State because you just couldn't stop handing them the ball with great field position. And you lost to Washington because you just weren't prepared for a road game and the defense could not stop that quarterback. And so everybody's regrouping and this and that. But the thing that still was sticking out there as you're 5-3, but you had played 4 of the top 8 offenses in college football at the time. And that's what I wrote that week before the Rutgers game of like, okay, this now needs to be, okay, we're playing the other teams now. Okay, you have a home game against a poor Big Ten team. And you hadn't had that yet. Your home Big Ten game so far had been, you know, you're playing USC, you're playing Ohio State. Well, now you got Maryland and Rutgers on the schedule next, and you need to show that if you, fine, you're not a playoff team, but you got to show that you're still on that next tier in the Big Ten. That's what this season needed to be. So that Rutgers game was really important to say, okay, now you have a game against the bottom of the Big Ten team at home. You need to go out and dominate. And they did.
We've reached the end of the third quarter.
Yes.
My question for you is at home games for Illinois, the Jimmy John's Red Grange sprint promotion?
Yes.
I can't answer this for myself. When was the last time you sprinted, full-on sprint?
That's a great question.
Were you being chased?
I raced my youngest son on Thanksgiving in Forest Park. I'm going to say 2017. 2017 was my last full-out sprint.
Why do you remember this?
I remember everything, okay. Scott. Ask me a date, and I'll tell you where I was on that date.
I know.
We had Thanksgiving at the house. It was a nice day. We went across to Forest Park. We lived in a condo by Forest Park at the time. The boys and I resurrected our old, you know, like
I didn't know if I wanted the whole story.
No, you're getting it. You're getting it. And so I told them as I was, you know, bragging a little bit that I still had it. I still had the speed. And so I raced my youngest son and lost horrifically. Like, there's no speed in these legs anymore.
They always say it's a father's best and worst day when he loses to his son.
Let me tell you this. Okay. Start the timer. I'm going to get this story in less than 30 seconds. I played a lot of softball back then. A lot of slow pitch softball. I am a 5'10.5" male. When I would, you know, say I'd hit one in the gap and I'm running, I'm going to get a double or a triple. The sound that the guys on my softball team would make is the sound from cartoons of like, because they say when I run, because my legs are so short that I look like one of those cartoon guys running. How'd I do?
even with allowing for coughing time.
Yes.
You didn't quite make 30 seconds.
We'll work on this. It's episode 6. We've got time. We'll work on this. We'll get there.
Illinois, after beating Rutgers, is 6-3 and gets their second open week. I'm indebted to Bob Osmussen of the News Gazette.
He doesn't bye week. Doesn't like saying it.
It's misnamed. It's not a bye. It's open week. It's a bye is something you get in a bracket.
Good point.
Yep.
I like that.
Open week. After their second open week, sorely needed, Maryland's in town. Former Illini offensive coordinator, Mike Locksley. A little bit on the hot seat coming in, too, because Maryland's struggling. I'm glad that they have decided to keep him because I think he's always remembered fondly in Champaign for his time here. But anyway, Illinois and the Terps, 24-6.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the best complete win in Big Ten play?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the offense, it's the goal line stand that Maryland's defense had. You know, Mario Sanders gets to the 1 foot line. They review, he wasn't in. And then four plays for the one, and Illinois doesn't score. That sticks out as like, yes, if they scored there and win 31-6 or whatever, you could say
99 yards are easier to get than that last one, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. And then Maryland does go 98 yards after Illinois fails to get in on fourth down. But on after a 17-play drive, Maryland fails on fourth down on their own end. And you had back-to-back goal line stands. And then, you know, Illinois still was comfortable. 10 minutes left, 2-possession lead, took over and you know, the defense was playing well at this point and everything else. But, yeah, it's hard to – that there's few things harder as a fan to watch than first and goal inside the one and you get 0 points.
Yeah.
That's really, really rough. And that those four plays still stick out in my mind.
I feel like it's getting harder to do these days across football.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
It just used to be – I felt like back in my day –
yes.
When a team got there, they just – I don't know if everyone's just figured out how to scheme and stop one-yard plays more.
Yes.
There's more throwing to the outside and see what can happen there because just the – let's see if I can smash it. If I can smash into you harder than you can smash into me.
That's right.
Thing maybe – I don't know.
I mean, we had those days like – I remember in the 80s. I mean, you're a Bears guy. It would just give it to Walter Payton and jump over the pile, yeah. You know, like – like you just don't even see that play anymore.
It's still a high percentage situation, right? But it just doesn't feel as automatic as used to. I don't have any stats on that. I'm just telling you what I feel.
I like it. I like that observation.
But all right.
Yeah, that was the story of that game. And you know, look, held them to 6 points. That's a good weekend from the defense.
7-3 now. You're going to go to Madison, and you're thinking with two games left, Wisconsin and Northwestern, games you should probably be favored in. If you can win the last two, you set yourself up for a nice bowl situation. And maybe the 1 in 1,000 chance that other teams in the nation that need to lose, and somehow you can backdoor your way into the playoff, even though that wasn't very realistic. It's funny because you told me on radio I think before the Maryland game, that you felt like Illinois was going to be due for a stubbing of the toe in the last three games, and it turned out to be Wisconsin. It was just the poorest game of the year.
Yep. Everything from the start, every little thing that could go wrong. They hadn't given up a long run the entire season. You know, when you hear fans yelling about, like, why is our safety 25 yards down the field? Get him, move him forward. Well, part of the Illinois defensive scheme is never give up a super long run. Like, have a safety net for all of this to prevent the explosive plays. And what does Wisconsin do? Go, what was an 85-yard run or whatever it was for a touch of 75 yards, whatever. So, yeah, all the little things you can't do, the turnovers, the everything else, just a really, really poor performance. Worse than Washington. Worst performance of the season, I think.
Yeah. It was. It was just there's not much that went right.
Yep. Yep. Even the little individual plays of like almost this and almost that, and then he almost got his hands on the pass, and it was just one of those like, man, every little thing is just going like this is just that game. It's just like every team's going to play one of those games each year, and you've got to find a way to win those games. And Illinois did not in any way find a way to win that game that night.
Season finale, you come home for the Saturday after Thanksgiving, Northwestern, Land of Lincoln Trophy, and we know the history of that series where things can get wonky, and it turns out there was an extra layer, or many layers, to this game, several inches, that is, of snow. Snowmageddon, whatever you want. The U of I staff works all hours to make sure there's part of the stadium that's inhabitable.
Yes.
For a home crowd. It's only the west side. I don't know how many people were there, but there was nobody that was there by accident.
Right.
There was nobody that's like, yeah, well, I don't have nothing else to do. Let's go to the game. You were absolutely made a choice to go to that game in that weather. And I saw so many people who had memories for a lifetime by just for going to that game, and they were rewarded with an Illinois win.
Yeah. I talked to a ton of people who just had to turn around. Like, the snow hit the St. Louis area overnight, and I know a fair number of people that just, you know, woke up to 6, 7, 8 inches, and it's like, I just can't, you know, the roads are this, and there's accidents, and just can't make the drive up there. And then I talked to several people who were trying to leave, like, Chicago at noon and went 15 miles, and, like, no, there was 40 cars in the ditch, and it's the blowing around, and just can't do it. And so we turned around and went back. So, yeah, it was just that kind of, it wasn't just snow. It was that kind of, like, a lot of people, you know, most everybody getting at least 6 inches, some people getting 10, blowing around in the evening and this and that. So it was a real deal snowstorm, which for, you know, I had to drive 1.3 miles to the game, which made that pretty easy for me.
Not in a fire truck.
Not, you know, we did not. That's like the worst possible, like, just the thought of trying, like, hitting the brakes while driving the fire engine and, like, you're sliding toward a red light. Like, it's just a nightmare. This thing is a lot of tonnage moving down the road. There's zero chance I would have it out on icy roads. It was so much fun. And you know, the snow let up by halftime, and so they went out at halftime and cleared everything off that they could. And that allowed for a second half where you could actually play a little more. It was still icy, and it was still people slipping around. Started to miss there in the third quarter, and that's why you saw fumbles on both ends and this and that. And, look, I'm doing my little countdown of the biggest plays of the season, and I think maybe the most underrated play, we were talking about goal line stands. Luke Altmaier fumbles right as the mist was going. You know, he fumbles at the 1 yard line. So now Northwestern has first and goal from the one, and the very first play, Dylan Rozek shoots a gap, hits the tailback at like the 4.5, and now they have to redo their little goal line series. They don't get in. They ended up kicking a field goal. They were going to tie the game mid fourth quarter, and one huge play by a linebacker turned what was, well, they're going to get it in on one of these tries, into, oh, well, now we're at the 5. Maybe we have to throw it now. And it stopped them. And you know, kept them from tying it then. And Illinois went down and got a field goal of their own. And game over, Illinois wins 8-4.
And they get a hat. And they get to go play on a mound of snow.
Yes, a snowball fight in the end zone, in the horseshoe. It was so, I was down there. As soon as the game was over, I, you know, put the media pass on so I could get onto the field. And it was, I mean, they were giggling. Like, this was, they were having a blast, which, look, it's college sports. That's what I want to see. I want to see 19-year-olds throwing snowballs at each other. Maybe not throwing a snowball at your car on the street, but it's throwing happened. Snowballs at each other and playing King of the Hill or whatever we want to call it, on climbing on the big pile of snow. It was just so much fun down there. End of season with an 8th win, going to a good bowl, and having a party of snow.
One more game. Illinois and Tennessee on December 30th in the Music City Bowl, the Liberty Mutual Music City Bowl in Nashville. Maybe we'll see you there. That's our football year in review.
Yep. I think it's, you know, if we put a bow on it, it was, we talked about when has Illinois football been in this position? And in my mind, this was 1989 and 1990 all over again. 89, they went 10-2. They beat Virginia in the Citrus Bowl. And then were ranked a lot of 1990 season, ranked as high as fifth at one point. Played number 11 Iowa as the number 5 team in early November in 1990. Lost that game, lost the next week to Michigan, and finished 8-4 that season. Still a great season, still everything really solid, but acknowledging that there were some dreams when you were number 5, there were some dreams. Just like going in the Indiana game as the number 9 team in the country, there were some dreams of a big season. It didn't materialize, but it's still 8 wins, which is very, very rare in Champaign and is to be celebrated.
It's still a chance for Illinois to set a record for wins combined in back-to-back seasons. They've tied it
with
18 right now.
Yes.
In the last 2 years.
Now, wait, is that tie? I didn't look this up. I know that stat that they're going for the record. Is that with like the 1902-03 or whatever, or do you know? Because
I didn't look it up.
Remember, seasons, some of those teams on the like 03 schedule, the Kirksville Osteopaths. There were two high schools on the schedule in 1902.
I will not have any of your Kirksville bashing.
All right. I dedicated an entire section of my football preview to the Kirksville Osteopaths.
I know you did.
Yes.
And people read it, which is the more surprising part.
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
Love it.
Next time on Light the Eye, we'll talk about some of our favorite moments, or some of the best moments, at least, for Illinois athletics in 2025. Again,
yet another cliche.
Yep. What can you say?
Yep.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, we'll see you when we light the eye.